watch the struggle, and I want you wrestling with them angels.
Here he is, from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The correct Jordan Hare Stadium time is 4:16 Central Daylight Time. Greetings and salutations, Orange and Truthers. Your digital audio device is tuned to the Orange and True podcast, harbored by collegeandmagnolia.com. I am Son of Crow, at Son of Crow 2 on Twitter, at Son of Crow on Venmo. You can call me Drew, if you want to, or Crow. I'm not going to be as anonymous anymore, I don't think. To one side of me, the rumor monger, Ryan S. Starrett. The S stands for Scoreboard, Oregon.
Just want to take a second to congratulate Chief here on Tennessee losing to Georgia State. How did that make you feel, Chief?
Great. The other side of me, giving you full Fort Payne ASMR, a man Ryan just introduced, a man of taste, a man who really doesn't like Jeremy Pruitt, AU Chief.
War Eagle.
War Eagle, everybody. War Eagle, gentlemen. Before we get to the Oregon game, though, which, spoiler alert, Auburn won on the last second play.
Don't ruin it. Spoiler alert.
If you're getting your Auburn news from this podcast, you are in the wrong spot.
Maybe somebody didn't watch the game just so they could hear us tell them about it.
And this is the only thing? Wow. If that's the case, then, well.
I'm so sorry.
Come on the show.
Yeah, bada getta. All right, so content on collegeandmag.com. Everyone's favorite segment, Boom Roasted, is back.
It's an award-winning segment, right?
They won a Cammy last year, which, if you've got nominations for the Cammies, please help me out. Hashtag Cammy, C-A-M-M-Y, and at me, at Son of Crow 2 on Twitter.
Have you been keeping track of the ones that we've mentioned a couple times?
But it's not easy to do. Okay.
You didn't know if you had like a notes on your phone kind of set up for it.
It really is going to be whoever has the best comments in December. Anyway.
It's a recency.
I have a huge recency bias when it comes to that. Boom Roasted, great week-long segment. You've got AU Nerd Film Studies coming back up this week. The position group grade voting. Now, Ryan, what is that?
Explain so what we're going to do is...
And how am I involved? What do I have to do?
What we're going to do is on the site, each week we're going to put up just a post for you to vote on how each position group did. Just A, B, C, D, F. And I think that'll probably come up Sundays after the game.
Yeah.
Just vote on it. We'll kind of track it throughout the year. Not totally sure what we're going to do with it, but it might be fun.
You should cough directly into the microphone.
Yeah, we're all sick.
I'll work better on it.
Yeah. We're all sick here, so sorry.
So every week I need to do what? Great. You're going to give me a position and I'm going to say
So what we might do with the staff is just have somebody be responsible for each position group. So I don't know. We'll see.
I want deep snapper, holder, and kicker.
Can I have flanker?
You gotta at least call it the right position. It's a long snapper.
Can I have flanker or a split end?
Yeah, flanker, split end, wing back. All right. Survivor Pool Blood Week. It really was the Blood Week of Survivor Pool. I am already out. Last year, I got at least into the SEC play. I got at least week 6 before I was out.
I think
this
over,
year, week 1.
I think over half the people that are in it this year are already out.
I didn't put an official comment in.
Stupid so South out. Carolina.
I guess I'm out. I did, in the first quarter of the Texas A&M game, ask if it was too late to take Texas A&M. But,
Well, you couldn't take Texas A&M anyway. It's got to be a P5 opponent.
Oh.
P5.
And, future Auburn opponent, North Carolina, laid the wood against South Carolina.
Let me tell you, I did not expect that for a number of reasons. One, because that roster is terrible at North Carolina.
And they've got Mack Brown.
Oh, well.
Yeah, Mack Brown.
I think it's pretty clear Will Muschamp might be gone after this year after losing that game.
Yeah, I think I had them going 4-8 this year, and I'm feeling mighty good about that prediction.
There is a universe. I know there's people listening to this podcast who hate Gus Malzahn. There is a universe where Will Muschamp is our coach, and that is a terrible universe.
Oh, it's a real bad universe.
And it's a real universe that would have happened. Like, would have happened.
I, a friend of mine really believes that if we were to fire Gus Malzahn, we would get Will Muschamp, and it'll be the worst decision that has ever been.
I think at this point, the shine is
hope,
off that one.
I hope.
I think he's going to come back for round
four of defensive coordinator.
I think he'll go the way of Bobby Petrino, where it's just it's never going to happen.
Yeah, I hope.
Man, and there's probably still people, maybe some listening to this podcast. I hope not. I think our listeners are smarter than that, who want Petrino to be our head coach to this day.
Man.
And those people are D-U-M dumb. All right. Auburn soccer played 2 matches in Athens. in part of some weird, I think women's sports do this. I know Auburn had a women's sport, women's volleyball, like
it's like a round robin.
It's not tournament. Even a tournament. Yeah, it's like,
well, it's just a let's get together and play some games.
Yeah, softball does this a lot, where it's, you know, get 4 or 8 teams come to one campus.
It's like a jamboree. Right.
Yeah, that's a good
way to put it. You can kind of make use of one field. All the rest are the same. Yeah. It's a cost-saving measure, I think.
So we did that in Germany in women's basketball a lot, too, on my JV team. We used to smoke people. That was what we did. I also wouldn't play my starters for the first game so that nobody knew how good we were. That was my... I wouldn't play at all the first game. Anyway, we've got... we beat Maryland. Like a drunk.
The brakes off Maryland.
Beat Maryland 4-0, which in soccer, 4-0 is like getting beat 56-0 in football. 4-0 is a bad beat. And two of those were PKs. And that's going to bring in Briefels on a PK and Sarah Houchin on a PK.
Interestingly, why did we have, was Briefels not in the game for one of those? Or
that might be the case, because she usually is our PK taker.
Yeah, I was wondering, do we not have a designated? Was there drama on the field? Did they fight over the ball?
What are the rules in soccer for PK? Is it not the person that gets fouled?
No.
Okay.
No. Matter of fact, it's rare the person gets
usually fouled. You have a designated PK taker, okay. And there's generally every year.
So it's more like a technical where one person shoots it?
Okay. Yeah. There's every few months, I would even say, there's some drama over who's going to take a PK on a team somewhere.
Yeah. Whereas at Auburn, it's been Rifaldinho, mainly because she is pretty automatic from the PK spot. So I'm guessing, Chief, that she was out.
That's what I
Jesse Giroux say. And Sarah Houchin had the other goal. So Sarah Houchin had a brace, Ryan, as it's called. The second game, Auburn lost to a pretty good Virginia Tech team. Now, ACC teams are usually pretty good.
Yeah, they're the best soccer conference outside of
it's the Pac-12 and ACC. Yeah. And then Maryland is a Big Ten team, but they kind of operate.
They're essentially an ACC team.
Yeah.
So beating Maryland like a drum is a pretty good deal. We have a pretty salty attack. But again, another PK against Virginia Tech. So I don't know if I didn't watch these games, full disclosure. But I would like to know if it's that we are really good at getting penalties or if it's just early in the year, overly physical.
Maybe even a bad referee. You never know.
Yeah. So, but this week, guys.
Tigers are coming home this week.
Two home matches.
Pretty exciting.
Thursday night versus the Syracuse Orange at 6:30 p.m. And then Sunday. So if you're in town for the game versus Troy, we're playing soccer at 6 p.m. on Sunday. So if you're in town.
Whoop, Troy.
Hopefully we get a game against Troy. So, like, let's say you live in Birmingham. Maybe you got to book that hotel in Auburn for 2 nights anyway. So maybe stay your Saturday night and then go to the free soccer match on Sunday evening. Mm-hmm. And you're still, it's only 90 minutes, guys. You're still out of Auburn by 7:45 and, or by 8. But you miss all the traffic.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about being on 280 in game day traffic because it's Sunday night.
You get to see Auburn sports.
Yeah. For free. And you're still back in your bed in Birmingham by 10:30 p.m.
Or Atlanta.
Crow guarantees it.
Same or goes Atlanta. For anyone living in the Atlanta area.
No, it's 11:30 because of the time change.
Right. The time change might get you there.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to be doing. I hope to go to at least one of those games this week. Maybe even if it's that Thursday game. That'd be really nice.
Yeah, I'm thinking about going to that one as well.
Hopefully it cools off a little bit.
Yeah, we've had some good weather, though, this weekend for like Memorial Labor Day.
Today was pretty warm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, should you go take a break?
I guess so.
Let's do it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. So this past week, I don't know if you guys have read it yet, on Banner Society, there was a pretty amazing article by one Stephen Godfrey. I read it the day it came out, and I remember thinking, like, I texted to my buddies who are not Auburn fans, and I said, hey, if you want to peek inside what a big-time college athletics looks like, because even if you're not an Auburn fan, you can read it and go,
wow. Almost every program operates in a similar way.
Right. I said, you know, this is kind of the way everybody operates, unless you just don't want to win national championships. Mm-hmm. Which is fine. Not everybody does. Like, I don't think Vanderbilt Athletics operates that way. I don't even think Mizzou Athletics operates that way. There's about 10 teams, 10, 11 teams that I think probably operate identically to that. But one of my buddies was like, this seems a lot like dirty laundry. I was like, yeah, a lot of it does. Like the fact that the booster in question is claiming that everybody wanted Auburn to, everyone in Arkansas to just hire Gus away from us in 2017 so we can go ahead and get Jimbo Fisher. Mm-hmm. And it's a real thing.
Yeah.
So if you haven't read the article, it's basically, excuse me, kind of breaking down the 2017 scenario where Leith had just been hired. We didn't have an athletic director. Gus was kind of on the ropes after the LSU game and then comes back and beats Georgia and Alabama. You know, you know how the season went.
Right.
He gets that contract. And how Jimmy Sexton kind of set up Stephen Leith.
Well.
And
yeah.
There's a lot more going on behind the scenes that you may not have already known. Because there's a lot that I didn't know. But there's a lot of booster politics. And, you know, it's interesting because it's not something you get to hear about very often.
Yeah.
I think Godfrey did a really good job of kind of, and they, like Crow said, peeling back the curtain.
You know, I don't even know if Alan Green had been here if it would have made a difference, because I don't know that Alan Green is familiar with dealing with Jimmy Sexton.
Well, here's the thing. You got a guy in Stephen Leith. Whatever you think about him as a person, as a president, he's a man with a PhD in plant pathology. His undergrad is in plant science. His master's is in plant pathology.
Does this guy grow weed?
This is a man who is a scientist. Like he
was, came from Iowa State.
This is a person who was a brilliant plant pathologist, which is why he has a PhD in plant pathology.
Mm-hmm.
None of that prepares you to negotiate with a, not just an agent. This was not Jimmy Sexton's first negotiation. This is a super agent.
This is the Mino Raiola of college football agent.
Yeah.
Coaching
it. It really is like, it's like me going and playing one-on-one with Michael Jordan. Like, it really, it's...
No, and that's why I'm saying, I don't even know if it would have been any different if Alan Green had been in place by that time either, because I'm not sure he is familiar.
He's a guy who played college baseball.
Right.
And is a good fundraiser.
Jimmy Sexton is the best at what he does.
Yeah.
And, I don't think it was real. We got Jay Jacobs had dealt with him a lot. And I don't think there's anybody in the business that hasn't been bent over a table by Jimmy Sexton at some point or another.
In 2017, at the time this was negotiated, Jimmy Sexton represented 11 of the 14 SEC head coaches. 11. And that doesn't happen because he's an okay agent. It happens because he's the best agent in the country. And because he represents all of those coaches, he's able to negotiate and leverage one of them against the other one fairly easily.
So, for those that don't know, Jimmy was Tommy Tuberville's agent. And after we let go of Tommy, or he retired, or whatever you want to say happened there.
Allowed to pursue other opportunities.
Yeah.
When we hired Gene Chizik, one of the conditions was he had to fire Jimmy Sexton as his agent. Because we had been taken to task by Jimmy Sexton so many times over 10 years.
And this is in the article. It talks about how Jimmy Sexton and Tuberville and Auburn basically invented the buyout.
Yeah.
That's now a thing
because
of how Jimmy Sexton used to get Auburn over the barrel with Tubbs all the time. And it was always Arkansas. Arkansas has been Auburn's contract foil in all of these, where the thought is that Auburn's coach is going to lose. We're going to lose our best coach, our good coach, to the Arkansas Razorbacks, which everyone at Auburn perceives as a huge step backwards for that guy.
Yeah.
And would look horrible for us that we would do that.
Yeah. For Gus, I didn't think of it that way. I thought for Gus to have gone there, that's his dream job, I guess. Just because that's...
Is it, though?
Well, that's where he's from, though. That's right. Where he's from. There'd be much less
connotations with that, though.
Much less pressure there for him. It would have made sense at the time for Gus had things gone worse than they did in 2017.
Yeah.
Now, I don't, the way things went, I don't really,
I don't think Gus was leaving Auburn after the Iron Bowl to go to Arkansas at any point. Right. How, if Gus had been fired from Auburn, maybe he goes to Arkansas. Right. I don't think he was ever leaving Auburn, though.
Yeah.
But Auburn couldn't take that chance.
Right.
Because you had a guy, because really the, and the picture that Stephen Godfrey paints is perfect. The idea that the boosters, that Jimmy Sexton pitches to the Auburn boosters, here's what's going to happen. You're going to have Gus Malzahn in confetti at the SEC championship game, walk off the field and go call the Hogs. And every Auburn booster was like, no, we cannot let that happen. So then Stephen Leith decides, according to this article, I'm going to be the white hat. I'm going to be the hero of this story.
With the backing of one of the biggest Auburn
boosters. One of
the
biggest, the guy whose name's on the business school.
Yeah.
Not the building, but the school. And I'm going to be
there's
the guy.
There's also another Harvard building, by the way. Oh. There's two on campus.
Mm-hmm. And so Jimmy Sexton sits down with Stephen Leith. And now you have Gus's buyout. However, he makes a point in this as well that Gus's buyout was, at the time, the fifth largest buyout in the country. So it wasn't like Gus is now the highest paid coach in America.
Right.
Gus didn't have the biggest buyout in America.
Right.
But Gus all of a sudden got this massive buyout. And it was 100% because we were afraid he was going to go to Arkansas. But it's funny because the other coaches ahead of Gus were all coaches that had either won a national championship or, well, no, they all had been at that point. So because it was Urban, Saban, Dabo, Jimbo, and Gus. Gus was the fifth highest buyout.
I mean, that makes sense to me because by resume, Gus is maybe the fifth best coach in the country.
And then
despite looking at the 8-5 seasons or whatever you want to say, his resume, he's won a national championship as a coordinator. He's gone to a national championship. He's gone to two SEC championship games and won one.
He's been Alabama twice.
He's beaten Nick Saban twice, which Dabo has done.
And Hugh Freeze.
Oh, yeah. And Hugh Freeze. So
Liberty coach.
When you look at when you sit down and look at it, if as long as you don't look at those 8-5 seasons that for your team and you just look at it and you're like, oh, this guy, I mean, who else in the country has done what this guy's done?
Nobody has. And the other thing about it was that in the article talks about too. You should read the article, bannersociety.com or afootballwebsite.com. Both get you to the article. It makes the point that another Jimmy Sexton client, Kirby Smart, the week after Gus's contract is announced, it's announced that Kirby Smart has a new extension, and it's the identical contract. And apparently it had been in the works for weeks. So Sexton basically told, well, do you want him to at least be paid like the Georgia coach who hadn't done anything yet?
Yeah.
And so you have Gus getting Kirby Smart's deal. This is very similar to... This is really inside baseball. So Emmitt Smith, in 1993, held out of the first three games of the NFL season. The Cowboys lost all three games. And eventually he had a huge deal, came back, and the Cowboys went on to win the Super Bowl. Ryan, the Dallas Cowboys are a football team that used to win Super Bowls. I don't know if you realize that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. So anyway, apparently the reason he held out was because...
He used to win playoff games.
Yeah.
Actually.
He held out because Jerry played him like a fiddle. And he walked into Jerry's office and said, I want to be paid like the best running back in the NFL. And Jerry says, great. Do you think Barry Sanders is the best quarterback running back in the NFL? And Emmitt says, yeah, he's one of them. And Jerry goes, all right, you know what? You're right, Emmitt. I will give you the exact same contract Barry Sanders has. And Emmitt was like, wow, that was easy, and walked out of the office. What Emmitt didn't realize is that Barry Sanders had one of the worst contracts in the history of the league and was getting paid pennies on the dollar. So all of a sudden, Emmett's agent sees this contract and tells Emmett, you idiot, get back in there. You've just made a huge mistake. So then Emmett holds out. This is very similar to me as to what happened to Jimmy Sexton. Jimmy Sexton walked in to Stephen Leith's office and said, well, shouldn't your coach, who just beat Alabama and Georgia, be paid at least as much as the Georgia coach? Yes, you're right. Oh, we'll sign this piece of paper and we'll make sure of it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we realize that the Georgia coach is getting paid too much money, too.
Everyone's getting paid too much money. I mean, It's ridiculous how much money these guys. Texas A&M is paying Jimbo Fisher
$75 million.
They're just paying that no matter what he does.
So his buyout is at the moment $75 million.
You could say, well, guys, I think I'm just going to go fishing for the rest of this contract, and they're still paying him $75 million.
Yeah,
like that is absurd. But that, as you pointed out earlier, is a direct can be traced directly back to Tommy Tuberville
at Auburn, and that's Auburn. So in long to TLDR, go read the article. It is really, really good. Okay, let's move on. Moving right along,
talk about the football game, guys.
Let's talk about the football
game. There was a game.
There was a game.
Oh.
All right. So Auburn played Oregon in Dallas in Jerry World.
Yeah.
Home of Crow,
a stadium that I've been to a few times. Can tell you it is a tough place to play an afternoon football game, but luckily they're playing it at night. Apparently the punter, Aaron Sipos, was hitting the scoreboard before the game, and so maybe he altered his punting, which was one reason why we had some pretty bad punt coverage.
Yeah, he wasn't getting a lot of distance.
Well, I think he was getting decent distance, but just he was no line drive. So there was no way for the coverage to get downfield. Yeah.
But they've made the rule that if it does hit the scoreboard, he gets to repunt it, I believe. At least in the NFL, when the Cowboys built that stadium, the NFL.
I'm not sure what the college rule is on
the scoreboard's absurd.
It's absurd, but it's never been hit.
Oh, in a game, he was just
punters come out there before games all the time and hit it. But I don't think it's ever actually been hit.
I can see it being a mental block.
Yeah, though. I guarantee you that's what it is.
Screw.
If you've never punted in that gym, I bet that's the case. Bo Nix, Chief, what do you think about Bo?
Bo knows. I thought he looked better than your average freshman.
I did too.
He especially the final drive, which we'll get to later, I'm sure. But Bo, he looked pretty poised. He did not look scared. Never once looked scared to me. He was running for his life on several occasions. We did seem hesitant to run him on purpose, though.
It was weird. The first or second drive, he was out there. He hits the deep ball to Hastings, and the next play, it's keeper off tackle.
Yeah, and that was awesome.
Picks up 20 yards.
Yeah, and I don't know why we didn't do that all night.
So I think everybody's, oh, man, he's going to be able to run now.
In fact, I'll just skip right to the final drive. The play before he had the keeper that got the first down, I was incensed because I'm like, Why did we not just roll him out on a boot and just get him? He'd get the yards. He would have done it. He went to the opposite side.
Rolled him out to the left a lot, which I didn't really understand.
You're
asking him a lot to throw across his body.
Yeah, he's not Brandon Cox.
Yeah, but I think we were probably a little more confident on
the right side was rough for much of the game. But I thought Bo looked good. He threw the two interceptions. Both of them were behind the player. His last touchdown was behind the guy, too.
And I'll defend that. That was the correct throw for the situation.
Sure.
Because the corner was already behind Seth.
Yeah, right.
That ball was not going to get picked
off. Also, Seth is much larger than
him. Right.
And that may have just been the call. Like, then come back.
Well, because the worst that's going to happen on that throw is that Seth doesn't catch it.
Right.
The corner's not getting to it. Right. And you're already in field goal range.
Right. So he made some money throws in this game, too.
That last drive, the first throw to Seth Williams, he got out of bounds, was a
buddy
rope.
That
to the outside.
Listening to Stan White on the post game, Stan thought that was the best throw he saw.
That was an NFL throw.
Yeah. That was a big boy throw for sure. And again, he did not look fazed by what was happening, even despite some pretty shaky coverage in pass protection.
Well, and we can't say he played perfect.
No, he didn't.
There were
through two interceptions.
Whether through coaching or through just this is how he was playing in his first game, he didn't make all of his reads. Even when he did have the pass protection,
sure.
You could tell he was ready to scramble,
right,
just to try and make something happen.
Which, again, we saw a little of that with Jarrett Stidham last year behind the same line. Yeah.
And the difference, though, is that when Stidham got out of the pocket, it was, oh, my God, I don't know what's going on. I got to go.
Yeah.
And you could tell Bo kind of had a plan in his head.
Yeah. But
he didn't run. Bo didn't run downfield much.
No, he ran.
He would scramble out of the pocket and still make a throw.
Yeah, he got rid of the ball a lot, smartly, a lot. Yeah,
a lot of those fine. 13 for 31.
How many sacks did he take?
One, I believe.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that was late smart. In the game too.
Yeah,
I think, and I like. I'm a Jarrett Stidham apologist. I think in that game, Jarrett Stidham probably got sacked 4 times.
Easy. Probably because he was hesitant to get rid of the ball when he should have.
He didn't want to throw picks.
Some of those throwaways, there were some guys open.
Right. If he had just tucked it earlier, he would have had room. Right. And that's what I'm saying. The decision making on those, he was safe, but
yeah,
probably could have made some
A lot of that's probably got to be down to speed of the game, right, being much different than what he was playing against.
Well, and I'm sure all week he's heard. We can win this game with defense and running.
Yeah.
Do not mess this up.
Yeah.
I think you saw freshman mistakes, but again, I'll say it again. He had a lot of Colt McCoy
in him.
That's
what you're feeling?
I do. A lot of poise. At no point did you think the moment is too big for this kid.
So even with the two interceptions, you never thought, God, gotta get him out of there.
Yeah.
I think there may have been a
Twitter group would have wanted
of people
out.
On Twitter, maybe. I wasn't looking at a lot of Twitter. I was enjoying the game at a fine local establishment, Southeastern, on Magnolia Avenue, right? Corner of College of Mag. Which was great.
Is that the official bar of this podcast?
It's the official bar of me.
Yeah.
So it's a great spot to watch a game if you're in town, or a great spot to grab a cold beverage before the game.
During the game or after the game.
But it was fun watching it there. It kept me off Twitter a decent amount. I was on there a little bit.
I was on about a 2 or 3 play delay.
Yeah, so was
I. Oh, yeah.
Streaming,
so I was in our Slack chat, so it didn't keep me away from that. Which, I don't know, we're all projecting confidence now. I don't think all of us were all that confident.
I would say coming out of halftime, there was a lot of uneasiness.
I felt sick.
On multiple occasions, texted, just wrote, Auburn cannot block. We can block.
Yeah, Crow was very down on the offensive line.
Cannot block.
Me too. I think we discussed this last week about how, I'm not even sure if we talked about it on air, how the story on both of these offensive lines was, they're all seniors and they're all going to be great, even though both teams had lackluster years along that line last year. And I think Oregon showed some pretty good improvement, and their line looked like, okay, they're up. The hype was real.
Well,
ours did not.
I will say one of the reasons their line looked so good is that they got beat on several occasions, but their game plan, they knew, okay, we're going to run away from Derrick Brown, we're going to get the ball out quick, and we're not going to let the defensive line beat us.
And once we wore them down and made them tired,
Derrick Brown just
ran booby up the middle on them over and over and over again, then that we looked a lot better.
So Derrick Brown, he didn't have a big game. I think he had 3 tackles, no sacks or anything.
He jumps out on tape.
If you go back and watch, if you are looking for Derrick Brown, you see
problems.
Him just lay out the center or the guard on
causing
several
problems.
Plays. And like I said, that their game plan was to just avoid him.
If we want to talk about our defense, not necessarily our defensive line.
Let's transition to the defense.
KJ Britt is the standout for me. He only had 7 tackles, but, buddy, all 7 of those tackles were...
He made him hurt.
Yeah.
Golly, that's for sure.
He looked good.
It's a big third down stop. Third quarter, maybe?
I think that's right. Him and Popo both looked great.
You could tell. So... I think the guys in the lunch break were talking about Owen Popo earlier today about how he's the linebacker Auburn needed in this game. Not that he's better than Deshaun Davis or Trey Williams or Darryl Williams, but his speed and
he's quick
ability to get to the ball quickly
and cover passes
was needed in this Oregon game.
He covered. Yeah. He played a really good pass.
Well, I think he is where the game is going, really, with linebackers.
Right.
Guys that
smaller, faster.
Smaller, faster.
Can play in the open field.
That can drop into coverage and look like a safety, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you already saw he was the linebacker.
When
Auburn was playing 6 DBs, he was the only linebacker in the field because he could still drop back into coverage as well. In the secondary.
That's another true freshman right there.
Another true freshman.
That's what's crazy.
Who wears number 10?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
I'm hoping Isaac Okoro is going to wear number 10. I don't think he will. But
that'd be nice.
Everybody would wear number 10.
Yeah.
So the secondary, they were kind of the cause of a couple busts beginning of the game.
Yeah.
Javaris Davis,
that was one of the most bizarre defensive plays or non-defensive plays I've ever seen.
It could have been me out there.
here's the thing.
It looked like a game of PE at school, like where you can't tackle.
And so he's one of our better defensive backs.
I know. It was the weirdest
thing. But that guy is like 6'7" that was playing. But
yeah, he was very large.
Right. He's gonna see that highlight all season. Hopefully that drives him with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, because he is a good corner. And he's going to have that reputation now of, oh, he gave up that big play. You know, luckily it wasn't in a loss.
Sure.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that would really drag on him, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But
they took him out of the game.
So he did still play some, but he was basically playing 50-50 with Roger McCreary.
Well,
and he did play pretty well.
You see that, and it just looks like he was shaving points. I was like, are we shaving points? Like, I literally looked around the table of that. Are we point shaving?
There was the bust on the first drive where nobody picked up the receiver on the left side of the field for what, like a 20 or 30 yard gain?
Yeah.
That set up that first touchdown.
Those were their only two long plays.
So they had four plays in the first quarter that resulted in over 100 yards of offense.
Yeah.
And other than that, the defense played lights out.
Yeah.
They gave up 90 yards rushing, which that's hard for me to.
It's pretty wild
because it looked like we were getting gashed.
Dude, I know. They were getting like 10 yards a carry.
Yeah, and then in the second half,
a couple of those sacks took some yards away.
Yeah,
it was only, what, two sacks though?
Yeah, we only sacked them twice.
One of them was like a minus 13.
Yeah. And I think both sacks were not defensive linemen, right?
Well, one of them was Benson.
Sack.
I think Truesdell split one of them with one of the linebackers. Maybe it was a Kobe McLean.
I think that's right.
Because I know Truesdell got in on one of them.
And Denson
had a great sack. Yeah,
that was a key.
Maybe the MVP of the game, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had 13 tackles, two for loss, and a sack. He played great.
My MVP of the game. Y'all, do you want to do Barners and
sure, we bunkers? Can do that.
All right. We got a new segment called Barners and Bunkers. Barners are people who do good things. Bunkers, people who are bad people in some way. So, Barner of the week for me. Nobody talking about him. I've been waiting for you guys to bring him up. Nobody brought him up. Nobody brought him up on the Slack last night or today. So I'm feeling a little...
holding this in your back pocket.
Hipster Crow over here.
Freaking Christian Tutt played a game.
Oh, yeah.
He did. He played a game. Played a game on punt return. Played a game on defense. He came in, did an absolute great job in both capacities that we asked him to play. And we may not win that game without Christian Tutt getting us in some pretty darn good field position.
And he had one pretty big part turn call back.
Yeah. He had one long one.
Yeah.
There was a block in the back.
It was not a block in the back. Yeah, right. Like, the
kind of legs crossed.
Wasn't it on Iggy?
Yeah, I think on the first punt return.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It wasn't a good block in the back.
It was a long punt return. It was like a 30-yard return.
Yeah, he had a heck of a game. He had a lot of those hidden yards, as they call it. Like, he really flipped the field a couple times. And did not muff one punt.
No.
Which, as an Auburn fan, that is your biggest
story.
Didn't
even look like he was going to muff one.
He confidently caught and secured every single punt.
And only had the one where he didn't have a return.
Right.
And honestly, I feel like I was like, man, we should have just sent everybody then. And just if it,
I was waiting for that. As good as this team was on punt blocks last year,
I
think they only went after one, maybe in the game.
But Christian Tutt is my Barner of the week.
That's a solid one.
Yeah, good pick. For me, I've got Spencer Nye. As bad as the blocking was on the offensive line, he was the starter at H-back. A lot of people kind of thought that was going to be J.J. Wilson getting most of the snaps there, but Nye came in. Didn't really play a ton because we needed Nye to be that sixth blocker. Did a great job at it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the big plays were because he had a good block. Caught a ball in that last fourth quarter drive.
Mm-hmm.
If he can be an all-around H-back and stay on the field, whether he's blocking, going out for a pass, just he can catch a ball a game.
Yeah,
that's all he really needs to do. He's going to be a key component of the offense this year.
I'm going to go a similar route. Salvatore Canella with the wheel route. right?
Yeah, from the H-back.
From the H-back.
The undefeated wheel route.
Oh, yeah. I saw it. I yell, wheel route!
We
bar.
Had two wheel routes in this game.
I know. Sure. It was amazing.
You know what? We won. We now need to hit at least two wheel routes every game, and we'll go undefeated this year. I guarantee it.
It's the key. It's that's our mojo back, as Gus would say, mate.
We hit two wheel routes and zero bubble screens.
The bubble screens not being there was a blessing. Could you imagine?
Who were you throwing those to this year?
Eli Stove?
It would have been Schwartz, but he's not.
I don't think we're throwing this year. I think Gus doesn't call that play. I think that was a chip play.
Well, I don't know. Gus used to call some bubble screens.
He used to call some slip screens. We tried one of those.
Did not work out.
Yeah,
no, if Booby catches that, he's probably got plenty of room to run.
Yeah. He does not catch it.
Seth Williams on just a step back screen, too, got destroyed on the 5-yard line.
Yeah. The closest thing to a bubble screen we ran was the touchdown to Eli Stove.
Oh, man.
Who I call my, on the Slack, I called him my Moon Pie and RC Cola solid contributor of the game.
Yeah. I mean, he was, I think he may have only had the two passes that he called, but they were two key passes.
And one long run.
Yeah. Long run.
And that whole drive, that was the Eli Stowe drive.
Yeah.
It was him on the long run. He stayed on the field. Booby ran the ball. The next play, they weren't set. They only had 10 guys on the field, and they throw it to Eli Stowe.
I should probably give a shout out to Booby Whitlow because I was talking big trash on him almost all the game.
Until all of a sudden, second half.
Then he ended up with 100 yards. And
yeah, and he had 100 yards. The offense as a whole had 200 yards,
which
I think we haven't done against a ranked opponent in a little while.
We haven't done it in since. Listen to this, Crow knows. Because I read Justin Ferguson's tweets. We had not done that in a game against ranked opponents since the 2017 Georgia game. You know what else we did that year? We beat Alabama.
Yeah.
So, ergo,
we're going to beat
Alabama. We're going to beat Alabama in Georgia this year.
All right. We, as nervous as that game was, it started feeling really good, even in the third quarter.
Right.
We scored in the third quarter, which was nice. They didn't score after five. I mean,
the defense was elite those first two drives.
5 minutes into the third quarter, they scored or whatever, and that was it. Yeah. They didn't score again.
They didn't even sniff scoring again.
They didn't.
Right, so there was after the fumble return by Big Cat, I think that was kind of their last big threat, except until the very last play of the game.
Yeah, where he...
if we can talk about that for a minute. The best quarterback in the country is just airmailing the end zone from the 35-yard line.
That wasn't even close.
Like, that was one of those where you...
Is
knew
he the best quarterback in the country, though?
I mean, he looked pretty salty. He had a 135 quarterback rating in that game.
He's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Like 280 yards passing.
For as little help as his receivers gave him in this game, he had a really good night.
A couple of those passes were in the, like, he had so many of those, like, receivers sliding down and catching the ball because he threw it in the exact perfect spot for a receiver to slide down and catch the ball. I was very impressed with Justin Herbert until, with 6 seconds left, he threw the ball to his grandmother. And I don't really know why he did that. She's not playing.
I guess he was just ready for the game to be over.
Yeah.
Like, is that what was going on there?
He wanted to put that on film so the NFL scouts could be like, man, he can throw the ball a mile.
That
would
be a stance. He should have had a second touchdown on the second drive of the game. He hit the receiver in the numbers in the back of the end zone.
Yes.
He didn't catch it.
Oh, that was that.
And that led to the missed field goal, which ended up being pretty important.
Can we talk about our missed field goal? How in the world? What happened? It looked good.
It looks good.
I could have sworn that was good.
It looked good.
And they showed the replay, and it just, like, hooked at the last second.
Indoors. I don't know what happened.
Air conditioner
that,
got it.
That being said, I did not want Andrews to have to kick that ball.
Oh,
in the game.
Good.
It would have been, like, 45 yards. Like, he could do that. I'm not saying that he couldn't make that.
Guys,
kick.
If there's anybody on this team that I have less confidence in, and it's no – I don't mean any disrespect to him. It's Andrews Carlson. I think he has gotten a reputation off of his brother that he really doesn't deserve.
I mean, he has a better leg than his brother in terms of distance.
Right.
I think you might be right.
Like, I mean, he hasn't done anything at Auburn really to deserve the, like, respect of, well, we got our good kicker, let's get him in there.
But here's the thing, he's not a bad kicker.
Right.
He is a good kicker. He should be our starting kicker.
Sure. No, I'm not saying
he got
that.
Put in a lot of bad spots last year, kicking 50-plus as a freshman.
Yeah, and a lot of...
That was pretty frustrating.
Like, left hash... 55-yard field goals, or right.
Gracious.
Nothing like down the pike either. It's like, We didn't put him in a lot of situations to succeed.
I never understood that.
Daniel Carlson doinked a game winner against Wisconsin as a freshman, too.
Sure.
So, look, freshman kickers are going to be freshman kickers.
Yeah, I do feel like he gets a lot of, a little more respect than a guy who's a sophomore that hasn't won us a big game with his kicking yet.
Yeah. Anything else on this game we want to talk about?
Could have this chance.
I mean, we could talk about this for another hour.
Who are our bunkers?
Oh, bunker of the week.
Did they have to be Auburn related?
Hey, no. All of us in the Slack chat who were losing our mind.
Everybody that picked South Carolina in the survivor pool. Sorry, guys.
Everybody who...
Ouch.
And I appreciate Lonely Tailgater for calling people out. Although he was not high on the team after this win.
Right.
Whatever. He's kind of a negative guy. But everybody who... He called them out rightly. Like, if you, during the game, were like... Put Joey in. Get this joker out of here.
And now you're like...
And now you're super excited about Bo Nix.
Unless you were talking about...
You need to own up to
it.
Unless you were talking about after the fumble recovery from the five, Joey should have been in there.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I thought we should have left him in going for two. I didn't feel like we should have switched Bo back in for that.
Yeah.
And then we got the penalty.
Let me tell you, that super jumbo with Joey Gatewood.
That's a camp formation.
That's going to be tough to stop. Because they're like... They're probably about 10,000 pounds of weight.
They had,
behind the
they had Markell Harrell in the backfield.
No, we had,
essentially like a full back.
I believe that there were
I think there were seven offensive linemen.
Seven or eight offensive linemen. And at least one tight end.
There's nothing I love more, and this is why 2013 was so fun, than the other team knowing exactly what you're going to do.
Yeah.
You're not hiding anything. And you just go out there and you do it anyway.
Now, those people who saw that happen, us score, and are still, why are we running shotgun at the goal line? Just know that you're an idiot.
I was thinking that every time one of Oregon's running backs ripped off 10 yards on us, I was like, that's why you run out of the shotgun, because you build up all your momentum and just shoot right through the hole.
Like, it is. Shotgun at the goal line, to say that that's not a good thing is to not understand how running works.
Right. There's just physics.
You go under center, your quarterback has to run backwards.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yep. You're taking the ball backwards with
now the running
extra motion.
Might have momentum coming his way. But running a quarterback sneak from under center is literally just moving forward really quickly. It's not, you're not
you gonna, only do that if you need an inch.
Yeah. You're not going to get as much power as you will if you put that 6'6", 250 guy now doing the same thing, but give him a 5-yard head start. All right. You guys want to keep moving?
Let's take another break, I guess.
Yeah, take a break. And we are back. So the bunker of the week is the entire SEC East, who is very butt.
Man.
Yeah, Georgia was fine against Vandy, and then other than that, let's see. South Carolina lost to North Carolina. Tennessee lost to Georgia State. Missouri lost to Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky almost lost to Toledo. That game was in question pretty late.
Dude should have lost to Toledo.
And guess who got a contract extension right before the game?
Kentucky's head coach.
I missed that. Mark Stoops.
It's like the day before the game.
And Florida did not look that good against
SEC
Miami.
East,
no.
But Mississippi State about messed around and lost that game to Louisiana.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Superdome.
That wasn't good.
And Ole Miss lost.
Ole Miss
lost to Memphis again.
Ole Miss didn't just lose to Memphis, guys. I watched that whole game. Ole Miss was decidedly worse than Memphis at almost every position. Like, they were worse. This was not an upset. This was Memphis took care of business at home against
this
Ole Miss.
This is when the recruiting sanctions are going to come back and hurt Ole Miss. That's not the year that you get them because your seniors are still seniors. It's 2 years later when you haven't been able to recruit and your freshmen are now juniors and they're not that good.
And yeah, you might have quote unquote nasty wideouts.
Not anymore.
But that offensive line is trash.
So you're telling me that Grand Wizard Matt Luke is probably not long for this world.
I don't think Matt Luke. But here's the problem.
That's a casual level.
You're saying Matt Luke's a member of the Ku Klux Klan?
I don't know. His name is similar. I don't know.
Oh, to David Duke.
Yeah.
So if you're.
Also a Grand Wizard.
Yeah, he did. Duke is a Grand. So if you're telling me this Ole Miss team that last year had no defense but had a really good offense, now it doesn't have a good offense either.
But they got Rich Rudd.
Oh, that's do they?
That's
I didn't
he's
know.
Their OC.
Because
why would he do that? Because everybody
because
knows.
Because he's going to be the next head coach.
That that's the plan.
But why? I don't know. But why? Because now he's like tainting his own reputation with this crap.
Well, because I think they thought Ole Miss would be at least 6-6, and then sanctions are up after this year.
And they're like, thanks, but no thanks.
Matt Luke.
If you go 2-10.
Harry Potter. Or
and then they'll put him.
I'm just going to start calling him the Wizard.
Man. Grand Dragon is what they call them in the Ku Klux Klan, not wizards.
They have wizards too.
I wouldn't know, Chief.
Yeah,
I'm not from Sand Mountain.
That's fired.
So,
I think the dragon is higher than the wizard.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're basically insane. Racist LARPers.
Yeah,
exactly. I guess is what's going on.
That's gonna be the title of this episode: Racist LARPers. USC did not look good at all in the second half. Mizzou went on the road. Missouri went on the road to Wyoming, which already
is why are you doing
the
this?
Weirdest
this
thing is, that happened.
I'm sure our friend of the pod, Van Allen,
he probably hated that.
Detests that this happened.
Yeah. But I definitely did not pick Missouri to go 10-2. Don't look back at that.
Jeepers, creepers. And I didn't watch that game because I didn't know what channel it was on. And
it's on CBS Sports Network.
Yeah.
Not a real home network. Of the Pac-12, or sorry,
that's
not
where
West.
You go to watch rugby. That team added a really good quarterback that Auburn really wanted, and then lost to Wyoming. So I don't
know if play that bad, but
yeah.
Let me put it this way: if Auburn were playing Missouri this year, it would look like the 2013 SEC championship again.
Oh,
Wyoming just ran it down their throats.
Oh, well, I like that. I like.
Yeah, not the Auburn defense versus the Missouri offense, but right. The Auburn offense versus the Missouri defense.
So what we're saying is,
so you're saying like the Arkansas game from that year.
Sure. Yeah.
When Auburn decided not to throw it,
ran it down. Oh,
no, not that year. I'm talking about 2016. The 2016.
A lot of the Arkansas games.
Where I think Sean White might have thrown the ball 10 times.
2013, I think Trey had like 200 yards.
And 13 Tennessee
against Arkansas
was the same way.
2014 Arkansas game.
Yeah, guys, I like beating Arkansas. We should do that every time.
Yeah.
Boise State beat Florida State. Boise State came back and beat Florida State.
Yeah, this was like
their freshman quarterback.
21-6 at one point.
And that freshman quarterback at Boise State looks like a boss. He played.
Yeah, that was
really good.
That was.
He also looks like he's right out of One Direction.
So that game was weird because it looked like Florida State was going to be fine there for a second, and then all of a sudden they're not fine.
Yeah, there was a Florida State fumbled the ball on the inside the five, and they had two guys there to pick it up, and they didn't do it. And then the voice of Boise falls on it. There's a really good segment where Mark Richt kind of breaks down how to recover that fumble on the SEC Network. Mark Richt's great on camera, by the way. I don't know if y'all saw.
Is he?
Does he have his goatee?
I don't know, but he
know?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I'm going to say no if he didn't notice.
I like evil Mark Richt with the black goatee.
Bizarro Mark Richt.
Yeah.
Anyways. After that fumble, Boise goes just rips off like 21, 23 straight points or something like that, and ends up winning the game over Florida State, which ended up being a home game. Florida State wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah, so they lost at home.
Well, in front of like there were more people on the field at times than in the stands. I feel like
wow,
there was nobody there
because the Tiger Air is not going well.
Wait, it was supposed to be in Jacksonville.
Supposed to be in Jacksonville. Yeah, it was still kind of supposed to be home.
They were giving away $10
tickets, so people couldn't. Change their plans?
I think a lot of people may have just been evacuated.
Yeah, they just didn't go because they were afraid of the storm that is just absolutely annihilating the Bahamas.
The Bahamas right looks like a bomb went off. So
it's rough.
Yeah. So let's preview our game against the Green Wave of Tulane.
Conference game, isn't it?
Yeah.
SEC play.
SEC play.
Tulane beat Florida International. I saw on Twitter someone said that Tulane baptized the Florida International team that was supposed to be one of the Conference USA like teams to watch this year, and Tulane beat them like a drum. And so a lot of Auburn people are scared. I've seen Auburn people who are like, hey, I'm a little nervous about Tulane. They got an extra day of work. And what are we going to do? I think, go out and say it, I think Auburn wins this game by 20 points.
Yeah, I think the line's like 19, 18, something like that right now.
Yeah.
I think
Auburn. Why are we scared of Tulane again? Because we're scared of everybody.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Because we're Auburn fans.
Yeah.
And so, look, the sentiment is that it feels like a letdown game. And that, this could be Auburn turning the ball over or whatever.
I know for a fact that everybody was back to work last night. They had practice yesterday and they're back at it today. So,
I'm not that worried about this
game. I'm not that worried about this game. There's no way we lose it, I don't think. I know there's some people.
They were 90th in S&P preseason.
Yeah. There's some people that think this could be a replay of the JSU game in 2015.
Yeah, I think this defense.
Guys, JSU was. We shouldn't have been almost losing to them, but they were really. Well,
and
good.
Also, the
we weren't that good.
That 2015 team did not have a very good defense.
Yeah.
So against the conference,
and it was being
USA
led by
team,
Jeremy Johnson.
Yeah. I don't care who your offense is. If you have the defense that Auburn has against a team from a Conference USA or unless you're playing at UCF,
right.
Chances are they're not going to score a lot. So then you're down to, okay, can Auburn score 14 points? Because that's going to probably be what it takes to win this game. Like,
yeah.
I'm not 100% sure Tulane's going to get 21. So if Auburn can get 21, you know, then Auburn's going to maybe win comfortably.
I think we're going to more than cover. Yeah. I know I was overconfident last week about halftime. It looked, my prediction looked really bad, and certainly was.
Hey, Auburn covered last week.
But we did cover.
We did cover. So,
maybe man, I should just start saying that. From
the biggest bunker of the week is anybody who had Oregon at -3.
Oh,
because that
man.
Or at +3. If Auburn kicks the field goal,
yeah,
they get it.
Yeah, yeah, Oregon at +3 because that they lost that.
There were
a bad beat 9 seconds
men
left.
Probably on their knees in the sports books.
Yeah.
Seen that.
However, I mean, Auburn was a 4-point favorite at the time of the game, according to ESPN.
Okay.
And won by 6.
Yeah.
Guys, those casinos did not just build themselves. They got built by idiots. And the Vegas, I read an article the other day about how the Vegas lines are better now than they were 20 years ago. Like how they're more accurately predictable now than were 20 years ago, mainly because of how good analytics and stats have gotten.
Right.
So Vegas says 18. I mean, again, those casinos didn't build themselves. I kind of like 18.
Yeah. Okay. I want to do one more bunker of the week. I don't know if you guys saw the Jacksonville State Gamecock preview video for this season.
Oh, man, that was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life. I sent it to people who don't know anything about college football.
50 Shades of Red.
They were like,
it looked
is.
Like Jared Leto made that video.
As a Joker?
No, that's Jared Leto. He's makes some weird stuff, so... That's what it looked like to me. It was very sexual, and I did not like it.
Yeah, I sent it to my buddies, and one of them said that basically it just ruined his week. He goes, I can't get over it. He goes, I watched that video, and I'm just he was a film major at Oklahoma, and he was like, yeah, this reminds me so much of bad film student. it ruined his day. He goes, like, I almost got to take the afternoon off of work today just because I can't.
It is so bad.
They put a Christmas song at the front of it.
Guys,
and
Auburn has made the new Auburn commercial is not great. I don't know if you've seen
it. The Golden Eagle.
It's very 1990s.
Yeah.
But in the words of Sam Jackson from the movie Jurassic Park, could have been worse, John.
Could have been worse.
It looks very PBS. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. But that Jacksonville video
could have been worse.
That's my beloved Gamecocks. What are you doing?
All right. So, Brian, who is a player to watch for in this game?
Okay.
And then we'll close this thing out.
So, Justin McMillan, I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago. He's an LSU transfer, playing quarterback for Tulane now. Had a pretty good week. I mean, he didn't play very long against FIU, but he threw for 200 yards, ran for another 50, 3 touchdowns. If you contain him, you contain the rest of the offense.
Mm.
I mean, he does have SEC pedigree. He was a good enough recruit to go to
sure.
LSU. That's what you're looking for.
Okay.
They don't really have any NFL prospects or anything like that. Nobody standing out on the defense. They're going to be aggressive. I think they may have gotten a blueprint from Oregon. You know,
sure.
Quick
you got to try and beat up the Auburn offensive line.
I have a lot of faith that we'll be able to wear them out.
I think so. This is one where you see both of our lines of scrimmage just kind of leaning on them.
Yeah, I think, honestly, we all have watched Gus Malzahn on teams. That's what his teams do. They're going to be better conditioned than the other guys. And over the years, I think many teams have caught up in conditioning, but And if you can go out and beat the Oregon Ducks up, I know Chip Kelly's not there anymore, but they're still a fast-paced team. If you can go and wear them out, I like our chances to be able to wear anybody out, especially Tulane.
Tulane.
Yeah.
I think that we win this game. I think we win this game pretty well. But let's end the pod on a quick over-under. Over-under 10 plays for Joey Gatewood. Chief.
I'm going to go under.
Under 10 plays.
I'm going to go under as well because with Bo being the true freshman, he's going to get more snaps than a veteran would in a blowout.
Yeah, I think we want him to see
Joey might see more time against Kent State.
Yeah, maybe. But I just kind of think we want Bo out there as much as possible until we get into the SEC play. If we can get him off the field early in an SEC game, I think.
Yeah. Got one more question, though.
Okay.
Okay.
Are we wearing white uniforms?
Is this the
whiteout? I think so.
This is the whiteout.
I think they absolutely have.
They're pushing this harder than they have a lot of the other wear color games. Yeah. There's white shakers coming out.
I really don't want to wear white.
I don't know if I have a white Auburn shirt.
I have one. It's an Outlive shirt.
I think I've got a Road Cam jersey.
I have an Emory Blake jersey.
There you go.
But I don't like wearing football jerseys because I think men in football jerseys look silly.
Only if you wear a no shirt underneath it, then you look good. Then it's like, all right, that guy's hilarious. He's got no shirt.
What about a wife beater?
Yeah. Oh, even better. My only white Auburn shirt says we're totally a basketball school, and it's a scarlet and gold shirt.
Maybe I'll wear that.
Yeah. Perfect. Totally a basketball school.
Perfect.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening again. We will be back next week to hopefully review our beatdown of Tulane and talk about home Auburn soccer wins.
Oh, nice.
Thanks and more, Eagle. Love you guys.